thanks for downloading this episode from Teachers Talk Radio. You can find the full schedule and listen back to all our shows at ttradio.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Bridget, thank you so much for joining us on Teachers Talk Radio. We really, really appreciate it. You know, a lot of teachers will be really interested to hear what you have got to say today. So I thought I'd start. What do you believe to be the three biggest issues facing classroom teachers at the moment? What do you think they are?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks very much for having me on. It's great to be able to join you, Tom. So some similar themes emerge in schools across the country, and there are slightly different challenges at different stages. But I think across the board, what comes up consistently are issues around attendance, connected issues, I suppose, around behaviour as well, which including low-level disruption that teachers report and the difficulties that presents. I would also say support for children with SEND being a massive concern that lots of teachers tell me that they're worried about at the moment, and support staff too, many of whom will be responsible for supporting children with SEND. And alongside that, probably just some of the wider pressures that families are experiencing. So the concern that teachers have about what's going on beyond the classroom and how they're having to step in and support children around child poverty, insecure housing, because they're the only people left standing in communities where often there's nothing else by way of support services. So that isn't a classroom issue as such, but I think knocks onto a lot of what teachers will talk about where it comes to the pressures that they're expected to cope with.
But if we had to zone into within school, so within a school, because I mean, a lot of those pressures you've just described are more external pressures that are coming into the school. So within a school, the teacher in the school, what would you say the top challenges are there for the teacher, for the classroom teacher in the classroom?
So the problem around attendance and the children kind of drifting in and out of school, which makes it harder for consistency in terms of teaching and kind of that, the kind of the progress that children will make, growing issues around behaviour, and I think a growing disconnection often in terms of the relationship with families. So the pressures that sometimes staff are under where it comes to managing wider difficulties in terms of problems that families are experiencing more broadly. I think in terms of workload, one area that comes up quite a lot is teachers wanting more time to develop outside of the classroom. So wanting more support around professional development, more time to prepare, and a lack of flexibility in many ways where it comes to their kind of job prospects and the desire for more flexibility, not least in a post-pandemic world where, you know, those outside of education often have more options to work at home and the like.
When you say behaviour, a lot of the surveys reflect that behaviour is the key issue really at the moment. If you look at a recent survey by TeacherTap, for example, they found that the statement was, I believe my school leadership's top priority for school improvement should currently be, and the top two were behavior during lessons, 24%, and behavior outside of lessons, 25%. So they're huge figures, and that's backed up by other surveys by NASUWT and the government and so on. So when it comes to behavior and sort of helping teachers with this, what exactly are Labour going to do? What are we going to do to reverse this obvious problem for teachers?
So many of those problems were there before the pandemic, but I do think the pandemic has made things worse, not least because I think lots of children are increasingly struggling to adjust to life back at school, or have missed out on some pretty important moments around transition, or have missed out on big chunks of their education, and sometimes lack the ability to interact with their peers in a way that is positive and constructive. And I think that feeds through into some of the behaviour problems that we're seeing. Now, we can't turn back the clock. And, you know, it's a source of real sadness to me that we didn't have a proper post-pandemic recovery programme, the kind of which that Sir Kevin Collins had recommended the government should bring forward. But, you know, that hasn't happened. I think first and foremost, it's about the shift that we need to see in terms of the status and standing both of the profession, but also education as a whole, and its value to society and what government regards as important. So I don't feel at the moment that we've got a particularly good relationship between government and schools. And I think part of that fracturing is then the relationship between schools and families. And that feeds through, I think, into some wider attitudes about how we, sometimes a lack of respect for teachers, both within the classroom and beyond, and the need to kind of have a shift in approach in terms of the direction that government will be setting around some of those wider challenges. Now, that isn't something that government can do quickly or easily or overnight. That's a much longer term shift that we need to see. I think alongside that, the degree to which I would want to continue to support ongoing kind of development and support for leaders, be they middle leaders or school leaders, so that they have the expertise and the support that they feel they need to manage behaviour right across the school, because it will often be the direction that's set from the top that will determine so much about what an individual classroom teacher will be experiencing by way of behaviour.
Yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong, the two things you're sort of saying there are government policy and maybe some school leadership as the causes for this decline. You've obviously mentioned COVID as well, but do you think that's going to be sort of, I mean, you know, do you think that's enough for the teacher, if that makes sense, in the sense that they're saying that the causes of behavior, for example, I saw a poll a couple of days ago, it was only anecdotal on social media, but you know, a lot of them were saying it was a lowering of expectations in the classroom, not by the teachers, but from a pressure to lower expectations and to not sanction and to not actually have robust policies in place. Do you think that's a concern?
I mean, schools do need to manage behaviour, and they do need to have clear and consistent policy in terms of the approach that's taken. And I think there are two parts. There is the role for government, and then there is the role for schools overall. And the two have to work together in order to get the most effective outcomes. I would say, I think part of the role for government is that reset in the relationship that I would want to deliver if I was Secretary of State between government and the profession. I think beyond that, it's also some of the wider pressures that sit around schools and families that I think if we could take some action to address, that would be beneficial all around. So that's why we've got commitments around more mental health support in our schools, why we need to make reforms where it comes to support with children, for children with special educational needs and disabilities, the commitment around breakfast clubs that we have. I think there's a lot that we can do to ease some of those pressures that are driving, I think, you know, causing a lot of people to consider whether they want to remain in teaching, because they're having to contend with a lot more than just the kind of core job of being a teacher. And there is a limit, I think, to what we can expect schools to do. There is also a limit to what we can expect schools to do in isolation. And we have to, I think, government has a responsibility and a role in addressing some of those wider societal pressures that I think are making the job of teachers a lot harder than need be the case.
What should, sticking on behaviour just a little bit longer, what should happen when a student assaults a teacher in school? What should happen in that case?
Well, I would expect there to be serious consequences. It's hard to kind of speculate on a hypothetical, because the behaviour policy would, I would imagine, partly consider previous behaviour and how that fits in often within a policy a school would have around escalation. But schools do have to reserve the right to exclude pupils, especially where we're talking about serious incidents such as violence, and especially where that applies to either harassment, intimidation, or violence towards school staff.
Yeah, because I mean, would you say, for example, if a student punched a teacher in the face, would there be a default response to that under a Labour government? That you would say this is what should happen if a teacher gets punched in the face?
Well, that is evidently extremely serious, completely unacceptable, and potentially is a criminal matter. You know, it would, you know, that is extremely serious. My concern is, yes, the incidents of violence that we see, I'm concerned about. What I hear a lot is about just the ongoing low level disruption that makes it increasingly hard for teachers to teach, and the disruption that then creates for the rest of the class who want the opportunity to learn. But I would expect, you know, it is for schools to determine their own behaviour policies. I don't think it's for the Secretary of State to micromanage from Whitehall how schools operate behaviour policies. But I would expect that any incidents were dealt with in line with the published policy where parents can see what is expected, are clear about the expectations. And sometimes, particularly where schools will be dealing with perhaps an ongoing pattern of behaviour or an escalating number of incidents, you would expect the policy to be followed in terms of the response the school would have, especially if this represented perhaps a ratcheting up or a pattern of behaviour. And again, following that policy to make sure that there's kind of consistency across the board in terms of how incidents are dealt with and a fairness in terms of approach. Hmm. The length and breadth of England in doing that.
What, there's been a lot of controversy recently about what some people term sort of high control behaviour policies, or, you know, scrutiny of students and so on. And I know there was one particular example recently of a head teacher sort of, you know, checking on the bins to check on sort of whether a student was taking a term time holiday, for example. I wondered whether you had a reaction to that story and whether you thought that, whether you would support that or not.
I'd be very reluctant, both as Shadow Education Secretary, but especially if I were Education Secretary, to get involved in offering a running commentary on how schools are discharging their responsibilities. I do think schools need to be allowed to get on and do their job without without politicians forever offering a commentary on those things. Schools have got a tough enough job and heads have got a tough enough job as it is. I do understand that schools want to make sure, in the wider sense, that schools want to make sure that children are in school. Parents should not be taking holidays in term time, but the issues that we've got around persistent absence in particular are much deeper, and I think the roots of that far more complex. And, you know, I've spoken about how we would take action to from government to address some of those pressures that are driving that really big issue we're facing around persistent absenteeism, whether that's a register of children not in school, more mental health support, better using data to analyse some of those patterns.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
There is a Labour pledge that you're going to improve behaviour in schools. Is that a pledge from you? That you're saying that at the end of the next 5 years, if you get into office, teachers are going to see an improvement in behaviour?
I do want to support schools and teachers in how they improve behaviour across our schools. I think, however, there needs to be a kind of a clear separation in terms of who's responsible for what and the process by which that would happen. So I think for me, it's about the role for government in providing schools with both the wider kind of backdrop in terms of societal pressures, but also the ongoing support both for school leaders, for teachers and for support staff to manage that more effectively, that they have the tools that they need, they have the backing that they need, but also alongside that, that they have in their government people who will support them, do back them up, and don't engage, I think, in what has been an unnecessary degree of negativity around the profession that I do think has undermined some of those relationships between schools and the families that they serve. And I think some of those pressures do come back to, again, the fact that lots of families are under pressure. That is in no way to justify poor behaviour within schools. But often teachers and schools are the only people that are left and the last resort, sadly, for many families. And the role for government is to change that.
Moving on a little bit, obviously we've got a new Chief Inspector of Schools, Martin Oliver. How would you sort of rate his start to the job? And part B is, should the Ofsted Big Listen have had a question about getting rid of one-word judgments?
So I've had the chance to meet with Sir Martin Oliver to talk about the work that he intends to undertake and also to have a discussion about, you know, Labour's priorities if we were to win the next election. Again, because I would hope to be the next Secretary of State in a Labour government, I'm not sure it would be helpful to that relationship to comment too much on the approach that he seeks to take. I think that the difficulty that we have at the moment around the removal of those one or two word judgments that Labour would deliver if we win the election is that it does require action from government, not just from the chief inspector, in order to make that happen. And I would want us to move swiftly on moving away from that system, but consulting as a part of that on how we set out those report cards that we've talked about. And alongside that, again, an annual check on all schools around some of those issues we've just been talking about there around attendance, off-rolling, health and safety, for example.
So how would you rate Martin Oliver's start with a one-word judgment?
I don't think, well, I'm all for moving away from those judgments. I'm not going to be offering, a one or two word assessment of Sir Martin Oliver's performance. He is very new into his role. I think it is welcome that he has sought to engage with the profession and to listen. And my understanding is that will be part of a wider process that will be ongoing in the months ahead. And I think that will be an opportunity for teachers and for school leaders and for people working right across education to share their views as to what they believe needs to change. But I don't think it will be fair for me to pass judgment in whether that's one word, two words, or a slightly longer sentence at such an early stage of Sir Martin's tenure.
Is there a danger with the report cards that they will almost become a sort of, almost like a replacement for the one word judgments, but still something that's almost like a tick box thing that's like on one sheet of paper that parents will just look at? And it's almost like, do you think there's a danger that there'll still be a lot of issues with it?
Of course, whenever you seek to make big change, there are pitfalls, there are potential dangers. And that's why I would want us to take the time to get it right. There would have to be wide consultation around that. And it's about how you allow for that system to identify areas for improvement, as well as recognising a school's strengths. And I don't feel that parents right now would necessarily feel that the inspection reports that are produced capture what they would want to know about what's working well within their child's school, and also where there is greater room for improvement. And I think alongside that, we need a much more effective process by which improvement is supported and encouraged. Now, that's not for Ofsted to deliver. They're not an improvement agency, but I think there is more that we could seek to do, for example, through the regional layer within the Department for Education, to encourage collaboration and drive improvement, especially in those schools that have been facing some of the greatest challenges for the longest period.
Do you think that are you relaxed? Are you okay with CEOs of academy chains being paid 2.5 times what the Prime Minister gets paid?
I think all CEOs, all MATs, all trusts should seek to be transparent in their financial responsibilities. And I think there is a need for greater accountability right across the system and a greater degree of transparency. And that's why, again, we've said that we would want to have trust level inspection as well as inspection at an individual school level, given how important MATs are now in driving practice within schools. But again, I'm not going to offer a running commentary on individual salaries.
With regards to, before we move on from report cards, Bridget, what was your report card like at school? Did you get a glowing report from your teachers at school?
I really enjoyed school. And I worked very hard, and I got some good reports. Yes, that was I enjoyed school, and I took it seriously. My family valued education, and I really enjoyed it, and I found subjects that I loved. I always got slightly better reports in the subjects that I particularly enjoyed, but I think that's the nature of these things, isn't it? But I did all right across the board.
It is. And in terms of like the teacher who probably, you'll have had a wide range of experiences of teachers at school. So, who's the teacher who sort of inspired or helped you the most, and what did they do or not do that helped you?
It always feels slightly unfair just to single out one or two people, because there are so many teachers that made an impact in my life, many of whom I'm still in touch with and I've spoken to more recently since taking on this role. I think two I'll mention, although I could be here all evening talking about some of the brilliant teachers that shaped my experience. The deputy head teacher at my school, who encouraged me to apply to Oxford who was a very fierce character, but coming back to discipline, a rather severe disciplinarian that we all were very frightened of. So when I got word in class that he wanted me to go to his office to have a chat with him, I was absolutely terrified. But the reason he did that was because he was concerned I hadn't put my name down for a trip to Oxford. And he said he expected me to put my name down and be on that trip, which, you know, was incredible. We were all really encouraged to achieve all that we were capable of. And alongside that, one of my languages teachers, I love languages at school. She, Miss Hacker, she was then, was a brilliant languages teacher, but she was also a phenomenal rugby coach. And she got many of us girls involved in playing rugby for the first time. And again, the chance to try a new sport that I'd never done before, the chance to be part of a team. We travelled around the Northeast to do that. And some, you know, often for children, some of their happiest memories are some of those wider experiences, not just in the classroom, but some of the wider opportunities they had to develop as individuals and to travel. So she was a big influence on me, and I'm still in touch with her today. And we chat about education and what's going on out there.
Was there anything like from school where you think, I understand, I know you shadow education secretary, I get all of that, but everyone has an opinion on this. What are the things from just you being in school that you either liked or there must have been something in there where you went, as education secretary, I look back on my schooling and I want to see less or more of that happen. Was there any, what was your sort of pet peeve? You know, what's that? There's got to be something that teachers did or that happened in school. What do you want to see less of?
Yeah, I think I have to say at a secondary level, I went to a really fantastic Catholic state school and we had so many brilliant opportunities. The thing that has most stuck with me and that I am determined should be an absolute priority is that we see the value and worth in every person. And that was very much communicated to us. There were high academic standards. They expected us to work hard and do well, but they also valued the innate dignity of every individual and wanted to support everyone to find a sense of purpose, a sense of belonging and subjects and activities and pursuits that they loved. And that for me is what I find incredibly important. I should say as well, obviously it was quite a long time ago that I was at school, but I do have children of my own going through the state system at the moment. So I see it from a parent's viewpoint as well as from a politician's viewpoint. And I see it as a constituency MP in terms of what's going on locally, as well as, you know, my travels around the country. So I do see it day in, day out as a parent, as well as a politician.
One of the things we've mentioned, we've only got a few questions left now, so don't worry. But one of the questions was around SEND. We've sort of touched on that right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So how much extra additional investment are Labour going to put in to SEND?
Well, if we win the election, we'll face a really tough fiscal inheritance. The economy is in a terrible state and there will be some really tough choices about what we can and can't do. Reform of the SEND system has to be a really big priority. At the moment, it just isn't working for schools, for families, for children. It's a hard one, a genuinely hard one to grapple with from opposition, because we don't have the same level of access to, you know, some of the modelling and the forecasts and the data that the department would be using around some of this. But it is an enormous pressure at the moment. I think there is a lot more that we could seek to do in terms of putting money and investment where it currently, you know, within the current framework, making sure we're prioritising earlier intervention and early support, because sadly, you know, it often takes far too long for that to come about. But also some of the priorities that we've got around mental health support, around tackling waiting lists, are precisely to deal with some of those wider pressures that are leading to really unacceptable delays in children getting the support that they need.
But can you put a figure on it in terms of the number, the amount of extra investment, the additional money that Labour is going to actually invest into SEND?
No, I'm afraid I can't, and it wouldn't be right for me to do so, not least because, you know, we don't know quite what will happen between now and whenever the election comes, and then if we form the next government, the state of the economy. But what I can absolutely guarantee is that Labour governments always prioritise education. As Rachel Reeves was saying just at the weekend, it will be a priority for Labour, but we need to get the economy growing in order to have more money to invest in our public services? Had the economy in the last 13, 14 years grown at even the OECD average, that would have come in to the Exchequer that then could have been invested in our public services? So I know the system isn't working right now where it comes to send. I hear that everywhere that I go. If I could wave a magic wand and fix it, as I'm sure everybody would, I would do so. But some of the drivers of this are complex. Some of the problems are pretty ingrained. And I think after 14 years of failed reform, it will take us time to, you know, get the system back on a stronger footing. But I think alongside that, we do need to also consider how we can move rapidly to bring a more strategic approach to some areas where developments have been happening. So more inclusive, you know, often I've seen kind of specialist provision within mainstream schools, but where that's being done almost against the system rather than as a part of the system. I think there is more that we could do more quickly to think about that space, especially the space that will shortly be coming available with demographic change, you know, spare classrooms and so forth, how we might use that as a means of delivering improved inclusive education.
Can you guarantee head teachers that if you are elected, that by the time you've finished, there won't be any of them who are struggling to get a ceiling over their head? You know, can you sort of say, we're guaranteeing that buildings, particularly with the RAC fiasco, will be fixed under Labour?
Again, I think after 14 years where we've had a failure to deliver a school rebuilding programme of any particular note within that period, I will make it an absolute, it will be absolutely crucial to me that we make progress around this. Yes, it's RAC, but as you'll know, it goes way beyond that. It's asbestos, it's the wider kind of ongoing maintenance issues that schools are experiencing. I would want to get a full understanding of the full extent of just how bad things are. I'm concerned that I don't think we know just how bad things are necessarily. I think potentially beyond what has been made publicly available. But yes, we will have to act to put this right, as we did last time Labour were in government, over time, both in terms of the primary investment that we delivered, but then subsequently Building Schools for the Future programme. But, you know, we've had 14 years where we just haven't had an ongoing and consistent programme of school rebuilding that has stored up a lot of problems for the future. And it means that we're patching up schools that are way beyond their design life. You know, we've got a third of schools now that are beyond their design life. That is a massive problem. It is not something we can fix overnight. But I know that we should expect the very best for our children within state schools. They deserve to be going to school in modern buildings, and teachers and school leaders in particular shouldn't be having to spend hours and hours, you know, managing buildings maintenance issues. I mean, that is not a good use of their time.
Last question, which is sort of overarching and probably the most important one, actually, of the whole thing. You know, how are Labour going to fix recruitment and retention? And, you know, we've heard it all before, really, over the last, and this has been going on, by the way. I mean, OK, it's accelerated to incredible levels of, you know, some schools are struggling to get anybody through the door. But this has been going on for a long time. This has been going on for a long, long time. So are Labour finally going to crack this? And how are they going to do that? What are you actually going to do to sort this out?
Well, we have to, because if we don't crack it, we won't be able to deliver the education, the high quality education our children deserve. And I am concerned about the growing dependence on supply and the number of teachers that are having to step in to cover in areas beyond their area of expertise. So in terms of, you know, what we would do and the approach that we would take, Labour last time we were in government made tremendous progress on this. You know, the status of teaching, the ongoing support and development for teachers, the approach that was there in terms of supporting people to step up to headship, you know, a really strong record. I think a lot that we can learn from. I think in many ways, we have too few people working as teachers at the moment. I am forever impressed by the calibre of people that are delivering it right across our system. I think in many ways, a much stronger for those who were there, a much stronger basis from which to build than was the case perhaps in 1997. It has to come down to, there are issues around pay, there are issues about workload. Absolutely, I understand that. We need to take action, particularly around addressing some of those workload challenges. But it's about the status and respect of teaching. It's about the fact that we do not value or appreciate or seek to demonstrate that from government, that teaching is absolutely central. And it's about making sure that I want teachers and school leaders to feel part of, you know, Labour's mission from government to deliver on those opportunities that we want to see around making sure that the family that you're born into, the town that you're from, doesn't determine all that you can go on to achieve. Now, education isn't the whole part of that answer. There are deeper societal challenges, particularly around inequality, but it has to be a shared partnership, a shared endeavour. And my commitment, if I were Secretary of State, would be to, you know, having that ongoing discussion, being open, having a serious plan for engagement with the profession. Yes, there are trade unions.
To be fair, you not think that every education secretary has said exactly that? Every single one has said, we want honest and open discussions with the profession. Every single one for the last 20 odd years. So I suppose what I'm asking is, what's your top policy?
Well, I'm not sure they have done that. Two, if they've said it, they haven't necessarily delivered on it. And that has certainly been the case in recent years. You will not find me going out of my way to, you know, offer to, you know, what we saw from Williamson and from others, and what we've seen more recently from Conservative Secretaries of State, is a belittling of teaching in too many cases, a failure to deliver in terms of the respect that I think people are owed for the work that they are doing. I appreciate that only gets you part of the way, but I think it will be a good starting point to actually have a basic level of respect and understanding for what people are seeking to do. Where it comes to some of those other changes, I think there is a question around the role for government in supporting flexibility within teaching, not least in a world where especially some of our subject specialists have the chance to go and work elsewhere, where they can sometimes work from home or have a different working pattern. I think there is more we could do around flexibility. I think there is more that we could do in terms of over time seeking to give teachers more time away from the classroom and more opportunities for kind of ongoing development, for training. And I think also alongside that, I don't think technology is the entire answer, but I think smart use of technology as it develops, I would hope would allow us to allow teachers to focus on the important kind of face-to-face interventions and allowing technology to relieve some of that burden where it comes to administration, but also in better targeting of ongoing support. So making best use of that face-to-face teaching intervention, but also using technology to better identify need and to track progress. There's no one simple, straightforward answer. You know, I'm not going to pretend that this is all easy or that it can be done quickly. But I am absolutely determined that we make teaching a better place, that we make teaching somewhere that, you know, graduates want to go, they think is the place they want to be when they leave university. And that's not where we are at the moment. But part of that, yes, it's more recruitment and we're really struggling, but it's also having a strong retention strategy, because I think unless we've got a good kind of environment around retention, we won't attract more people into teaching either.
And if you had to choose between pay and working conditions, if you had to choose one of the two, and you know, and someone said, this is what you have to choose to make better, you can only choose one, which one would it be, the pay or the working conditions?
Look, I understand the cost of living pressures that working people are experiencing at the moment, and I wouldn't for one second seek to underestimate that. But what I've heard again and again from teachers across the country and from many school leaders and trade unions is that it's some of those wider workload pressures that they would regard as being more important where it comes to keeping people in the profession and encouraging people in. Of course, I understand at the moment, you know, pay in the middle of a cost of living crisis. I understand the pressures that people are under, but I've been struck by how many people in the profession have emphasised the wider changes they want to see that actually go beyond pay. Especially, you know, I would say newer entrants to the profession who are finding it a pretty tough adjustment.
So conditions.
that's what people, you know, that is, I think that is, yeah. Yes, I do think.
If you had to choose. Last one on pay. What is an ECTY, a newly qualified teacher outside of London? What do they start on? as a salary?
So my understanding, I haven't looked at the pay scale more recently. My understanding is that we're shifting towards the 30,000 mark. I'm not sure if that's come into effect just yet. And on pay, just to be clear as well, I mean, Labour and government did secure real terms pay increases for teachers. That was a part of the changes that we made. But again, we have to get our economy growing in order to do that.
Bridget, that was absolutely fantastic. I don't want to take any more of your time because I know you'll be really busy. So I just want to say a massive thank you for coming on Teachers Talk Radio. It's been great to talk to you. And yeah, huge thanks for doing the interview.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.